Ward versus Davidson, Julia, the Judson, Stephen L. DeVita, Town Council, Brian Dagan, pro se, appellee.
You may proceed.
Yes, sir. May it please the court, Julia Judkins on behalf of the school board. Feeding off the last argument, what the trial court ruled in terms of a factual finding, that was one of the last questions that was asked, what did the trial court rule with regard to SGPs? Were they teacher performance indicators? The trial court never really made a factual finding specific to that question. What they ruled, and it's on page 530 of the appendix, what Judge Hughes ruled was, while the evidence revealed that student growth percentiles can be used for multiple purposes, including teacher evaluation, on balance, considering the testimony and evidence, the student growth percentiles have not been used as a teacher performance indicator by Loudoun County Public Schools. That's it. That's the only statement addressing that question. And I think it's clear from the record, even that statement, though, it's clear from the overwhelming evidence that SGPs are teacher performance indicators. There's no contrary evidence. He didn't make the finding they were not. He based his ruling against the school board on the fact that he found we didn't use them. That was this.
Was it a ruling of fact or a ruling of law?
That we didn't use them? That's a factual ruling, that particular one.
That SGPs are teacher performance indicators. Is that fact or law?
I think it's law based on the Board of Education guidelines, based on the federal law. The use of these SGPs and teacher performance indicators is mandated by law. It's not something that is discretionary. So I believe the question of whether SGPs, it's a mixed question of fact and law to a certain extent, but based on the requirements in the state statutes that we use student academic progress as a teacher evaluation tool, and that we have guidelines, and included in those guidelines as published is SGP, student performance, SGPs as a mechanism to measure student academic progress. I believe that part of it is a question of law.
But isn't that inconsistent with the factual finding that, in fact, you're not using SOL test scores as a SGP, and you're required otherwise to use SGPs for purposes of performance indicators?
I don't understand the question. I'm sorry, sir.
You're saying that SGPs are necessarily included within teacher performance indicators, correct?
Yes.
And it has to be.
Yes.
And you're also saying the SOL statistics per teacher is an SGP. Am I right?
SOL, yes, that's one indicator.
Right. But you're not, in fact, using SOL scores and teacher percentile growth rates and ratios for purposes of teacher evaluation.
In Loudoun County.
In Loudoun County.
I argue that actually there is evidence that they were used. And if in the hearing on December 14th, before we intervened, there was, I believe at page 600 in the appendix, thereabouts, there's testimony that Mr. Davison, he testified, that he had FOIA'd VDOE asking for documentation of our login through the portal to VDOE to actually access disaggregated data. And he got that 27 times before 2015, that we, different people in Loudoun County, access the portal to get the data.
So sometimes it's used and sometimes it's not used?
That at best would be, yes. And Dr. Richards testified that because it's at a decentralized level.
So if it's used
level,
for some but not every single teacher, why wouldn't that satisfy the use by test and cut through all of this?
Well, I believe that this is all decided based on, at most, middle school rules of grammar that were taught in terms of the compound nature of the sentence. But to answer that is because there you have tying into back, all right, so how do you determine whose SGP data in disaggregated format, that's what they're asking for, How do you determine whose gets produced? You have a factual inquiry in every single FOIA. Do you use it? Well, this principal, remember it's a decentralized system, each principal can evaluate the teacher based on the factors they decide to use at that time. If they have SGP data because that teacher has taught that group of students for 2 to 3 years, which is recommended, they can go into the portal and look at it.
Well, the anomaly then is that the FOIA reach expands or contracts based upon whether or not it's used for a particular teacher, not for teachers generally in the system, but a teacher. That just seems anomalous to me.
Well, there are multiple factors. The guidelines, the VDOE guidelines, the state statute, and even LCPS's guidelines, which are entirely consistent, they all contemplate that there are multiple things school principals can use to evaluate teachers. There are 7 standards. They can choose, they can look at a lot of different things, among which are SGPs. And looking at SGPs, you have to break that down even further. The evidence shows requires more than just 1 year, requires verifying the teacher taught the students, but it is a teacher performance indicator.
Right, but under your theory, I mean, you keep saying this is decentralized to the point that the principals evaluate the teachers. You would say you're not even subject to C because it's all about local school boards judging performance, right? And so Loudoun County doesn't actually judge the school performance, the principals do?
All the school systems work that way. That's set up by statute,
right.
How they're evaluated. For example, the school board isn't evaluating.
This talks about the local school board judging the performance. So are you trying to distinguish between the principal and the school board, or do you agree that the principal is an agent of the school board?
Yes, there's no question about that.
Okay.
I'm just talking about the process and why the legislature built in so much discretion and built in so much data that can be relied upon and used. I think there's no question that there is evidence of use. Yes. Is some use enough? Does it have to be used in every single teacher evaluation?
Well, if we get into those kind of nuances, why isn't the tie go to the runner, which is FOIA is meant to be a broadly interpreted statute, and where exemptions and exceptions are ambiguous, the general policy is the public has a right to know.
Well, then, the statute is not ambiguous. It was not ambiguous. It's grammatically correct. The rules of grammar exist for a reason. If we're going to argue over, I don't think anyone can argue over the rules of grammar in this particular statute. It is a compound sentence set off by commas, and while we may not have relied on Butler, we did cite a case that discussed, as Justice Mims said, the antecedent argument as well, and that's Rubin. It's a Court of Claims federal case decided in 1991.
I'd rather use a Virginia Supreme Court case from 2015.
So would I. But that's second, the court said in that case, the doctrine of the last antecedent also used in statutory construction supports the special master's interpretation. That's why this argument is my primary focus, because look how you can descend into chaos if you have to have hearings and trials within hearings on how much does a school system have to use the data. Does that have to use it more than 50%? Does it have to use it?
We never reach that question if we hold firm to the rule of the last antecedent.
Yes. Yeah, and compound sentence. These are rules of construction. A lot of people don't know grammar anymore. Maybe it isn't taught as well as it ought to have been or should. But this is clear. And I don't even think it's subject to interpretation because it is written as elementary rules of grammar expect sentences to be written if that's the intent. And
but
it's
he has the other side has a fallback, and the fallback is it's not a teacher performance indicator because it's not actually, according to your theory, mostly used by anybody. And according to his argument, it's sequenced in a way that it can't really be used timely in an annual evaluation. What's your response to that?
It is a teacher performance indicator. His own evidence overwhelmingly proves it's a teacher performance indicator. He pleaded it was a teacher performance indicator in his petition for mandamus. His expert came in on my cross-examination. Yes, It's a teacher performance indicator. It is a teacher performance indicator. There's absolutely no evidence to say it isn't.
So it is a fact-finding question, or not?
You're talking about
experts, you're talking about pleadings, you're talking about evidence. Is that a factual question or a legal question?
It was treated as a factual question. We argued that it was not should not have been because it was clear from the guidelines, the State Board of Education guidelines, and the statutes that talk about what is required for teacher evaluations as of 2012 and 2013. We argued it was clearly a teacher performance indicator.
The expert testimony was more of how these indicators are formulated and what goes into them. No one at the trial seriously debated that this was not a teacher performance indicator.
Exactly. There was no factual dispute about that at all. And even though we objected to the plaintiff's expert, it turned out, I believe, that it was favorable on that point. It's established it's a TPI, teacher performance indicator. Then the question became factually, did we use it? Dr. Richards testified there is some usage. As Mr. Davison argued, 1%. We used it. We didn't use it across the board.
But you're saying it's irrelevant whether you use it or not anyway.
Yes, it's completely irrelevant whether we used it.
May I turn your attention to the other issues on which you allege you should have been allowed to intervene?
Yes.
I guess my first question is, Loudoun County knew about the request at the time that the department knew about it and chose not to participate.
Yes.
The issue of whether you should be allowed to intervene, is that discretionary with the trial court?
It is discretionary with the trial court. And my argument that it was abused at this point is the judge did let us intervene. He let us intervene, but he limited it. Wouldn't let us argue
the
personnel.
What about the issues on which you could argue? Is that discretionary with the trial court?
Yes.
So how did the judge abuse his discretion by not allowing you to argue on the personnel information and the personal information?
Well, the same argument that applies to 295.1C, I've got 3 minutes left. I want to reserve 1 minute for rebuttal. The same arguments that in evidence covers the personnel exemption, the personal information exemption, all of the evidence is in the record that it's a personnel record under the broad definition of personnel records recognized by very limited courts. We have two circuit court opinions. But the same, it's still confidential. It was never argued before. There was no rationale to let us intervene on one statute and not intervene on another. It made no sense because the same body of evidence supports the personnel exemption and the personal information exemption.
While you're sitting waiting for your rebuttal, would you look at your assignment of error one, and when you get back up, tell me if your cite to Scholastic records is a typo or if you changed it to testing records, which is another section.
It should be 3705.14 in parentheses. Okay. That would be the Scholastic records assignment of error.
Okay.
That and its student, and that was established in the lower court. I want to get to my nunk-pro-tunk argument on the judge's order. The judge as to the school board was never the custodian of the records. Under the FOIA statute, no judgment should have been entered more than 30 days, really, after the final order awarding fees against the school board, because we didn't have the power to release the records anyway. He never pleaded any request for fees against us. And this was done surreptitiously under cover of darkness.
Was the April order a final order if it didn't include the two individuals?
To dismiss the other two individuals?
Right. It didn't address the two individuals.
No, it didn't. But that's different from substantively awarding fees and costs against us without ever having given us a hearing on that and without it having been pleaded.
Now, I understand that, but one of the arguments was that it was a final order and it could not be amended.
It could have been for certain things, but not for everything Judge Hughes did in that case.
Then it's not a final order.
No matter what
it's styled, if it doesn't resolve every single issue, it's not a final order.
Well, he'd actually never ruled in the order, in the even on the record, he never said anything about the individual defendants. But as to the fees against us, I think I'm going to end up with 30 seconds left. as to the fees against us, we're not a proper party to be, it's a sanction award, basically. It's a sanction award. But he let us intervene, so how can we be sanctioned for having done so without any evidence presented and without any claim for that?
You have 12 seconds left.
May it please the Court, I'm Brian Davis, once again arguing as appellee. Let me address the other two quick issues to get those out. So on the modified order, agree it's likely not a final order, but even then, if I were to rhetorically ask a question, for example, Your Honor, may I ask a question? If either I or the audience doesn't address who that is, I would have to go back and ask the court to determine which person I need to get money from. Because VDOE, they're both, they petitioned to intervene as a respondent. They were granted permission to leave as a respondent. So they were clearly a respondent. And when the trial court issued fees against the respondent, that's unclear. So if this is remanded and that question is opened up, I'm going to simply move to have them both pay fees. Second of all, they are not the custodian of the records. Therefore, they are not authorized to make a claim, make a personnel exemption. If VDOE needed to at least appeal the personnel exemption to save that argument, I would point to the Robinson-Huntley versus George Washington Mutual Association. The proper party has to make that case. So I believe once the VDOE failed to appeal the personnel record exemption, it's gone. It's over. They have no right with respect to that.
Well, why are any respondents in the case who are not custodians to begin with?
Well, that's a good question. I would argue that they, if unless they agreed that they had custody of the records, and when that was going on, it hadn't really been decided. The following month, in April 2015, I had a case against them in Loudoun. Eventually, they argued there they were not the custodian of records, and the trial court made a finding of fact they were not the custodian of records. But at the time they were allowed to intervene, potentially that was still an open question. For example, the clerk case with the Daily Press, they're arguing that the real custodian is the clerks, and the central repository is just a holding. It's a holding center.
But if I could go back, wouldn't Rule 314 allow a party to intervene if they have a claim or defense that's germane to the subject matter?
Your Honor, we believe that that's not the case, that in Virginia law, you can only intervene if you are either a plaintiff or defendant or appropriately a petitioner.
So what does Rule 314 mean?
Well, it means they can intervene if they have a plausible claim in there. They have to be directly affected by that.
Why would the teachers whose records are potentially subject to being disclosed directly affected?
Well, so that's like saying that in theory they could go if, so people have the right to discretionarily release records. I think we agree on that under 40. So VDOE discretionarily released records. They don't have a right to go back and say, VDOE, you cannot do that if they're not the custodian of the
records.
But
if VDOE says we're not going to release the records, or if VDOE is in the process of making a determination, why wouldn't the teachers who are going to be directly affected be allowed to intervene under 3:14?
Well, the VEA is the next case, just in terms of the school board.
Okay.
Once the VDOE closed that down, if VDOE had appealed the personnel exemption, I would argue that's still open. VDOE is the custodian. Only they can exercise discretion under the personnel exemption. They have not appealed that.
Okay, you're correct. I'm moving on to the other case. Let me come back to Loudoun. Loudoun County employs these teachers. So why wouldn't Loudoun County have an issue or defense when it's their teachers' records that are being asked to be disclosed?
Well, you can make the same argument that the police has discretion whether to release records. And all criminal records can be used as personnel records by companies, public agencies, whatever. So just like the VEA, I don't think the VEA's argument has merits, because basically what you're saying is any public employer, or potentially any private employer, can go to anybody who's releasing public records that's damaging to somebody and stop them from releasing that data.
No, because they wouldn't, any public employer, anyone would not have a claim or defense that's germane. They would have to have a claim or defense that's germane.
So let's say I get stopped, or I have some criminal investigation, or I'm a public employee. Then that agency should go and say, hey, if you release that criminal record, you know, we're going to use that criminal record in our employee determinations and may fire him because of that. If you open up the personnel exemption that wide, it opens up, you know, before anybody releases everything, they have to determine whether it affects their personnel. That would be my argument for that.
And presumably they could file a submission as an amicus and have their voice heard,
exactly.
But that would be a different silo than being a party.
Yes, sir. That was our argument. Let me get back to the point on the teacher performance indicators. I think it's very critical. Could be used. First of all, I had several case law that says when a statute is changed, you have to assume that was a substantive change and it was changed for a reason. I understand the statute that says just the preamble or the summary is not determinative. But Washington versus Commonwealth, Burton versus Seifert, Verner versus Mills, particularly where it says the bills are expressed effective prospectively unless the bill expressly provides that such changes are retroactively effective on a specified date. The General Assembly, when they changed the law, they knew this case was going on. They could have put a stop to it. There had been another finding of fact in Loudoun Court in April of 2015 that the SGPs were not used as teacher performance indicators. They were not performance indicators in Loudoun County. That's a finding of fact. And so when the legislator made that change, they could have done it. It also says in Foster versus Smithville Packing, if the General Assembly, in Burner versus Mills, it says when an enactment uses the word reenacted in the title, that it shall mean that the changes enacted to a section of code for an act of assembly are in addition to the existing substantive provisions in that section or act. And are effective.
May I interrupt you for a second? Did you actually plead that SGPs, which SOLs would be included within, is in fact a component or one of the teacher performance indicators, whether used or not?
No, I say it is not. And let me make this argument. So I would argue that people may disagree on whether it should be used, but the absences of students in a classroom's teacher, I think we can agree that could be used. We don't maybe not recommend it, but if you say, hey, this teacher has a lot of his students' absence or whatever, it could be used. If Loudoun used that, is there any question that that data becomes confidential? In other words, if it's on the teacher's evaluation and it's used, it has to be confidential, correct? But on its own, are student absences or class sizes teacher performance in their own inherently? That's the question on the first part. And I'm arguing that they are not. I'm arguing, in fact, that SOLs should not be teacher performance indicators because as my on 1082 of the record, Professor Friedman argued that just average SOL scores, 60% of that is completely outside the teacher's control. So that's, we actually kind of agree that SOL shouldn't be. But I'm arguing that if it's not listed as a teacher performance indicator in the Loudoun Teacher Evaluation Guide, and that on three separate occasions, including the my final arguments, which were around like 473 to 494, I included the response from Loudoun Schools when I first issued the FOIA request. And they said SGPs are not used as teacher performance indicators. Let me make the point that on...
But you see, you're indirectly supporting the trial court's reasoning. The trial court's reasoning is teacher performance indicators in the abstract way includes the SGP, which includes the SOL ratios, but they weren't, in fact, used in this case.
Obviously, in my pleadings, I submit that they can be used. In fact, I submit that they should be used. A lot of people think SOLs should be used as teacher performance indicators. I think they're random data with related to teachers. It just tells you, you know, the students in the class. But
why are we going through this drill?
If they had used the teachers, if they had followed the federal guidance, then our school system's policies would be more effective, right? And the legislature, I would rather the data be made public. Ohio has released all of its teachers' evaluation ratings online. LA did the same thing. This is not a new issue. But I'm saying, based on FOIA, if you don't follow the statutes that 22.295.1c only protected teacher performance indicators. It's not in their personnel record. In fact, they claim they're not the custodians of record. It also is not listed as a teacher performance indicator in their evaluation guide. And on three separate occasions, including a finding of fact by the Loudoun trial court, it says they were not performance indicators at the time. Unless you are saying, in order to argue that SGPs are inherently a teacher performance indicator, you would have to argue that anything that could be is confidential. In other words, if anything that somebody could use as a teacher performance indicator, if that's the definition, then all of that is confidential, and it can never be released. And I would submit that the evidence that they released average SOL scores online, that Loudoun gave me teacher class sizes, that they put extracurricular activities that are not used, all of those go to the point to show that they are not. Ultimately, I would argue the only thing that's really protected is what's on that teacher's evaluation in the personnel file. In other words, each teacher has an evaluation. It lists, you know, hey, this is what you're being rated on, and this is your teacher performance indicator. And if you look at Section A of 22...
And your argument is based... I'm just a little confused. Your argument is solely based on the fact that it is a factor that could potentially be used, but because it's not used, it is subject to disclosure. That is your bottom line argument, and that's...
Correct.
The trial court agreed with that.
Exactly, and I believe the trial court made a finding of fact, Your Honor. And Ms. Judkins, it's funny.
You believe the trial court made a finding of fact as to what?
As to SGPs were not teacher performance indicators.
Because, but wasn't that finding based on the fact of your argument, because they're not being used?
So the law was modified to say anything that could be used.
No, we're not looking at the modification. Okay. Let me see if I can
answer the same question.
The question of whether the data is being used is clearly a question of fact. It either is or it isn't, and we defer to a finding by a trial judge on a question of fact. The trial judge, though, presumed that the use of the data was relevant to whether it is teacher performance indicators. In other words, the trial judge appears to have ignored the rule of the last antecedent. Ultimately, the question of whether student growth percentile is a teacher performance indicator, is that a question of fact or is that a question of law?
Question of fact.
Why?
In the VDOE guide, it clearly lists as one of their indicators on Standard 7 the use of the state-provided growth measure, which is SGPs. Okay, that's listed as a sample teacher performance indicator. So they said this is one that you can use, and you know we can argue the law, but I believe the to receive the money from the No Child Left Behind waiver they were supposed to. Loudoun did not use that. If Loudoun had used the sample VDOE guide, and in their bulleted teacher performance indicator list the state-provided growth measure as a teacher performance indicator, I wouldn't be making this argument today. Because then we get
used,
into which teachers use it.
Sir, if it was used, would it be a teacher performance indicator?
If teachers were using it, right, and it's being...
If it was used to evaluate the teacher, would it be a teacher performance indicator?
Yes, Your Honor.
And so the fact that it's... Your argument is the fact that it was not used... It's not a teacher performance indicator, but the code doesn't seem to support the fact that it has to be used in order to be one.
So I'm making two arguments.
Okay.
Let me try to make these very clear because I have limited time. This phrase says teacher performance indicators or other data used by the school board. I'm arguing the only reason that other data is there is because oftentimes you'll have, hey, you know, what was the percentage of our students who had good growth? And they'll have a number, and that's the teacher performance indicator. All the underlying data, you have to protect that in some way. That's why they put other data used there. They have to protect everything. I'm arguing that what makes any metric, a metric is just a general term, right? I can do anything. What makes a metric a teacher performance indicator, it is listed as a teacher performance indicator in the guide. In the Loudoun guide.
Well, the difference is we're not dealing with a corporate, you know, policy and procedure manual. We're dealing with the Virginia Code, and it has a term in it, and it seems quite unusual for that term to vary in its meaning depending upon the factual context of various school board policies.
I'm saying the only thing that makes any data or metric a teacher performance indicator is it's listed in the Loudoun evaluation guide as a teacher performance indicator. That's what makes it a teacher performance indicator in Loudoun. Otherwise, I would argue that if they can use student absences, if they can use that, why is that not a teacher performance indicator if it can be used, right? I'm saying nowhere did Loudoun define the state-provided growth measure as a teacher performance indicator. And that's also what I believe the Loudoun... So I believe the findings of fact are twofold. Not only that the data wasn't used, right? But it's that SGPs are not teacher performance indicators inherently. In Dr. Susbury's testimony, which roughly went on 11:30 to 11:50, she was familiar with the creator of SGPs, Betta Benner. SGPs were created to measure student growth. In fact, in the stimulus plan of 2009, schools had to give those, BDB had to give those to the schools even before they could link them to teachers. In other words, SGPs were given to these school districts to help inform instruction with that student before they could even possibly be used for teacher evaluation. SGPs are not inherently created for that. A lot of people, including the union, say using SGPs to evaluate teachers is an abomination, they're inaccurate, and they should never be used. I agree with them on SOLs, that people think SOLs are good. SOLs are not accurate. I believe I've gone past my time.
Your time in this case has expired. Rebuttal?
The prior proceeding that he relies on in Loudoun County was factually different. He does not have the whole record before the court. He asked for aggregated reports of SGP data, which the evidence showed we did not create or have. And I replied.
Call the next case.